Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and our beers are 6 inches long and 7.8 inches around.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we are the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading our Patreon-selected book of the month, Breakfast of Champions by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. And Nate, starting the beer.
So, okay, both... It's okay, Kurt Vonnegut and the two main characters, Kilgore Trout and Dwayne Hoover, they have many twisted thoughts in this book. So this is Twisted Thoughts by Threes Brewing. It is a mosaic double IPA. That means it's made up of many very little double IPAs, but you put it all together.
We've never made that joke.
I don't remember that one.
No. I feel like we must have.
I don't remember a lot.
Some variety of mosaics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's pretty good. Yep. It's a double IPA.
So what was our theme? Why was this?
This was books that previously didn't win polls, and now they're back to win a different poll, but three still lost.
Oh, so it's like people who lost the last election running again. That's something that won't happen ever tomorrow.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah. So the only real loser is America. Okay.
As usual.
So, Breakfast of Champions is Kurt Vonnegut's 1973 book. That's the word. And it came out
it's
and
an LP.
The LP. It came. It's the first book.
It was just an audiobook.
You know what? How many fucking vinyls would that take? And it came out after Slaughterhouse-Five. And Kurt Vonnegut himself gave this novel, I think, a C+. He has a thing.
It's definitely the weirdest.
He rated all of his books, and he gave Slaughterhouse-Five an A+. It was the only A+. And then he explained like briefly and in his, you know, sarcastic kind of way. And I think this got a C or a C+ in that article. What happens? Ooh, we'll try. A lot though. Almost everything. But it follows, as Nate said, two characters and then later a third character who wrote the book.
Yeah.
Kilgore Trout, who was mentioned in Slaughterhouse-Five, I believe.
He's like a recurring character, like sci-fi writer in a bunch of books.
The Vonniverse?
The Vonniverse, yes. I guess he's usually like a side character, maybe? I don't know. I don't remember. He was in Cat's Cradle, right?
Fuck if I... Nate?
Was he? Yeah. No idea.
He was mentioned.
Nor do I care. Although, okay. So I thought at the beginning, I was like, this is fucking hilarious. So Kurt Vonnegut is a... kind of a sci-fi writer. Not exactly. It's more like social commentary through very bizarre sci-fi satire of sci-fi. But okay, Kilgore Trout is a sci-fi writer, but he's so bad, or because people just don't care about sci-fi, science fiction, he's written 200 books. Those sounds more like short stories, but he's written 200 books, but he can only sell them to porn magazines in order so porn magazines can, like, have some bulk to them in between all the pictures. So, like, they're literally the articles in a
porn
magazine.
You need some pages to get stuck together, Nate.
So...
What kind of pictures are in these magazines, Nate? I think he says it, like, once or 2,000 times.
Beavers?
What position are the... Tell me more about these beavers, Nate.
Wide open.
It's like Penthouse.
And they're all like crudely drawn
more hustler
cartoons
maybe.
With a marker. They're not actually pictures.
Thank goodness, I suppose. It would have made it too tempting to whack it. But he,
this book is also filled with the pictures, including a picture of a butthole, which is just like an asterisk.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you put your butt on the line, Jimmy. You have an ass to risk. Thank you. He has repeated that butthole drawing in other books. Yeah, there's just random drawings, and he'll just say something. Well, you know, it actually was a flag, and it looked like this. And it's like, wow, great writing, Kurt.
Also, there's the drawing of the German flag. There's no color, so it's really hard to tell.
The beginning, especially of the book, feels like if you asked the stoner, sarcastic guy in your dorm to tell you about Howard Zinn. Because he just kind of goes through like how shitty America is in the most superficial way possible.
It sounds like a series of sarcastic tweets.
Oh, yeah.
And equally unrelated to each other.
Yep. And not all particularly like well thought out, but some are pretty astute and still.
Yeah, they're like, you know, shallow hot takes. They're not essentially wrong, but they're glib.
Yeah. Emphasis on the lib part of it. Oh.
Oh.
But yeah, they're very glib. And it's like, this is funny. And I guess in 1973, that was more like transgressive and edgy. Edgelord that Kurt Vonnegut was, yeah. So then we meet our character. And he says, like, right away from the beginning, he's like, oh, yeah, one of the characters is crazy, and he's going to kill a bunch of people. It's like later in the book, or he's going to attack them.
Mm.
And he keeps, like, mentioning it. Just like, oh, yeah, and soon that guy's going to bite off that guy's hand or whatever the fuck it is. And that guy is Dwayne Hoover, who lives in Midland. I forget where it is. Is it Michigan? Or like what they call the asshole of America or the universe? It's
Indiana, maybe.
And it's somewhere in some made up Midwestern town. And he is a card. He deals
Pontiacs.
Is it Pontiacs? Yeah. Okay.
He sells Pontiacs.
And he's a guy, you find out his wife has killed herself by drinking Drano. That's mentioned a few hundred times.
It's also revealed that she was also insane.
Yeah, so there's a lot of autobiographical elements that you don't have to work that hard to know are autobiographical, because Kurt Vonnegut tells you.
This also happened to my mother.
It was like my mom, except my mom killed herself this way. Oh, cool. And the other character is Kilgore Trout. Nate, help it make sense. Help fix it.
So, make sense? I can't do that, but I can tell you some more funny things. So, I know other things that happen are, like, occasionally Vonnegut will describe one of Kilgore Trout's, like, the premise of one of Kilgore Trout's books where something funny happens. But my favorite one was, as for the story itself, it was entitled The Dancing Fool. Like so many Trout stories, it was about a tragic failure to communicate. Here's the plot. Oh. A flying saucer creature named Zog arrived on Earth to explain how wars could be prevented and how cancer could be cured. He brought the information from Margo, a planet where the natives conversed by means of farts and tap dancing. And it was like fucking hilarious.
And then when the alien tries to save somebody whose house is on fire by farting and tap dancing to them, they just beat it to death. They're very funny stories. I don't know what they meant, but they were there. Yeah, and it's also common because they're being produced in, you know, the smuttiest magazines. They change the titles of the stories. So, like, the story is written as, you know, Gilgongo! Exclamation point. A story about whatever. But it was published under the name of, like, Big Fist Nipple Man. Like, they're just, like, not even fucking close. It's like, but they made no... They didn't change anything else. Like, fuck it. It's just, no one's reading this. And Kilgore Trout doesn't even know when they get published, because he doesn't send a return envelope when he submits the stories.
And he actually puts aluminum... What he does for a living is he puts aluminum siding on houses, and then he writes all his books in the spare time.
Just the windows, I think.
Oh.
Because later a guy asks him, like, what about that siding? He's like, I don't work in that division.
I've never done it myself.
Yeah. But he has all sorts of bizarre stories... I don't know. I just want to drink this beer. They make very little sense. It's like the Tangerine Express. I don't know. I don't have to try anymore. Fuck this.
Sounds like a story he would write.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to, yeah. But it's a story about a sentient orange who comes to a planet of other citrus fruit, but he can only communicate with them telepathically and via wet dreams. And then they all jizz on each other, and that's the end of the story. And he's like, get it? And you're like, no, I don't. This is a beer from Stone, Tangerine Express Hazy IPA. And strangely enough, it's a hazy IPA with tangerine and pineapple. Confusing. I guess because Pineapple Express is like the name of that movie. They couldn't use that one.
Oh, yeah. I feel like they could.
Yeah, I guess they still really garden that IP. And it's pretty good. It's pretty good. There may be some more of these when you guys come by this weekend. Because I was at Costco.
Stocked up.
I did. It was great. So, you know from the beginning that Kilgore Trout and fucking, what's his name? Howard?
Dwayne Hoover.
Dwayne Hoover. Because there's a guy whose name is Wayne Hoobler.
Yeah. That is very similar.
They're going to meet, and it's going to, and Dwayne Hoover is slowly going insane. And Kurt Vonnegut keeps describing as he has like bad chemicals, like the chemicals are fucked up in his head, and they're what's making him be a total, you know, asshole to people at times, to just be incomprehensible. But nobody knows that, which this might be one of the other commentary bits of the book about mental illness, because Kurt Vonnegut's son apparently was schizophrenic, and so he was trying to like understand that during this time. But nobody gets that, so they assume it's something else always. So, for example, when Dwayne Hoover yells at Harry LeSabre, he says, like, your clothes suck. You dress like an asshole. The guy's like, oh, fuck, he knows I'm secretly a transvestite. And then the guy's all paranoid about it for the whole weekend. Does that matter? No. It's just a funny little thing, but it's there.
So you hear, so right in the beginning, Vonnegut tells you, here's what's going to happen. Kilgore Trout is going to meet Dwayne Hoover, and Kilgore Trout is going to be the most important person in the world, but also the most dangerous, because he's going to convince Dwayne Hoover that Dwayne Hoover is real and everyone else is a robot, and then he's going to go kill people. You find out that like in chapter one, and for the next three quarters of the book, you're like, I thought that was going to be the premise of the book, because there's nothing about that here at all. It does finally happen in like the last chapter. And then it's over, the end. There you go. That was the book. But mostly it's Kilgore Trout going to Midland, Indiana, or wherever it is, to the arts festival. He gets invited because one person who has ever actually read his books says, you're the greatest author in the world. And yet those are inter back and forth between chapters with Kilgore Trout and Hoover, about Hoover like losing his mind, being desperately lonely.
The patron of Kilgore Trout is a guy named Rosewater, which there's another Kurt Vonnegut book called like God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, or something like that, which I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same universe. And Kilgore Trout's like, I assume that was a kid. Guy who liked my books had to be a kid.
Reading all these Beaver magazines.
Yes. Which, there's a lot of, like, meta stuff in the book, like...
It gets explicitly meta by the end, yeah.
But there's a part early on, which I thought was pretty funny, where he references Marshall McLuhan, who is the guy who said the media is the message, I believe, or the medium, I forget how he phrased it.
But I thought that was the 80s when he said that.
And that guy died in 1980. Okay. That's from the 60s.
Oh, so the 60s, okay.
Yeah, so he's like, you know, and so you're like, what does that have to do with anything? And there's a quote because they're talking about it. What is this Marshall McLuhan? He says, I don't know who McLuhan is, but I know what it's like to spend the night with a lot of other dirty old men in a movie theater in New York City. And he said, does this McLuhan, whoever he is, have anything to say about the relationship between wide open beavers and the sales of books? He starts like, yeah, I'm going to mention this thing about a media studies guy. And then let's subvert that. And that's funny. Totally. I don't know exactly what he means there. I don't really. I don't know about almost anything that Kurt Vonnegut really means. I think he was a guy who liked to just shit on everything. But
he does seem to like shitting on everything.
Yeah. I have thoughts about that. I'll get to it at the end. But like I just thought that was really funny. He's like, Marshall, the media is the message. So I guess the message is wide open beavers. Which... For porn magazines, yeah, that is the message.
True.
No, actually, the expression would mean the paper, which is not the thing. Because it was about TV, that quote. Anyway, there's all just episodes, and you meet Wayne Hubler, and here's where there's some like nice dated racism that Kurt Vonnegut was made a lot of comments about how like America was racist, though he does refer to Asian people as Chinamen persistently. And uses some hard R's throughout the book. And you meet the black character, Wayne Hoobler. And you find out Dwayne Hoover's name was originally Hoobler, because that was a black name. They changed it. And like, does this mean something? I guess something about America's inability to deal with race. Because he does mention a lot about back in the days of slavery, people treated other people as machines. And like, this is part of the Kilgore Trout. You are a machine thing? I don't know.
It was also like his. They found a magic cave that they were telling tourists to go to, but they had gotten that land because a black family that had come from the South, like, got that land and then, like, couldn't afford it, or they just got it taken from them.
Depression. Shit.
And then Dwayne Hoover's family got it, and they, you know, so they're all related or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so they put in the cave all these, like, fake skeletons, like a skeleton holding a pistol, like, it's Jesse James. And then there's, like, another, and I forget if it were skeletons or, like, mannequins of black people breaking off their shackles, and, like, the slaves use this in the Underground Railroad. I was like, no, they didn't. It was totally fucking made up.
You know, so the cave with, like, one way in and one way out.
It's a good hiding spot. He's making fun of, you know, I'm sure, like, America's myth-making, and, you know, this book is like 10 years before that Howard Zinn book came out. So, like, yeah, I guess that correction was probably needed in the way we learned our history. Pray name, what was that? Howard People's History? That's from the 80s, right?
People's History. Is it from that? Yeah. Is it that old?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Howard Zinn's been dead a while, and he lived to be like 1,000. He was really old. Nate, explain it. Make it make sense.
I can't. Another one of Kilgore Trout's random stories is, what does that have to do with anything? No idea. But okay, so in this planet, this is a futuristic planet Earth type planet where all the plants and animals are dead except for humans, and all the food is made out of petroleum and coal. And so there's something, because the book is a lot about pornography, and so the alien goes and said, do you have any pornography on the planet? And he's like, yeah, we do. How dirty is it? Oh, yeah, it's real dirty. And then they go and they watch it. And it's just people eating real food. It's like close-up shots of people, like, eating actual real food.
It's like Food Network.
Yeah.
So then preparing. Throwing the food away.
Yeah, just eating until they're completely stuffed and then throwing it away.
And the hookers that people hire, they're just like, how do you like these scrambled eggs? And they're just eating, like, coal. But they just, like, talk dirty about the fucking coal. Like, yeah, let me base the shit out of it.
There's like 40 or 50 just random little ideas for stories in this book that are, you know, some sort of commentary, or some are just random weird shit.
I mean, they're just funny as, like, the easiest way to interpret them. Which I have to say, he is very funny. This is an entertaining book if you just want to chuckle every few pages, like, ah, that's a weird idea. If you want to make sense of them, because I don't think they're random. I think they did mean something, or at least part of them is supposed to mean something. That's much harder. But then, yeah, Kilgore Trout starts in New York, and he's, like, hitchhiking, and he meets, like, different characters, and everyone's miserable. And everybody, you know, like, he meets a truck driver, and there's just, like, weird conversations. And they're like, yesterday was Veterans Day. Were you a veteran? Nope. Okay. That's a scene. You go. What does that fucking mean? He's like, why does your truck have this name?
But why was it called Pyramid? He's like, oh, it's because he thought it sounded good.
He's like, Pyramids, it's a trucking company. Pyramids don't move. Just pretty funny.
We're hauling 10,000 olives or something, or 10,000 pounds of olives.
He's like, 78,000 pounds of olives bound for Oklahoma or some shit. He's like, okay. But then he meets the one guy who's content, and that probably means something. The guy who's driving the Galaxy. I forget what his fucking name was.
I don't even know what they had.
But then
names.
It's like, this is where I started to feel a little bit like crying a lot 49. You're like, wait, sci-fi author, Galaxy, it must mean something. And I'm like, I don't fucking know. And then all the while, then we're cutting back and forth. Fucking, what's his name? Hoover.
Dwayne Hoover is banging his secretary because his wife is dead, but it's okay, you know? So, like, they're banging that but it's still a small town, so they're keeping it secret, and she works for him. And then he gets very upset when she suggests that he opens a Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise in town. And he's like, you're using this for my money, for my chicken money. And she's like, no, I just want, you know, things to be okay here. And he's losing his mind.
Well, she has a pretty racist fucking reason for opening it.
Oh,
she's
She's like,
there's a prison here, and a lot of black people visit their relatives there. And I think they like chicken. He's like, I can't even process that. That's in the book. That is in there, Nate.
I am certain that has been an actual reason someone started a business at some point in the state, in most states, if not all. Maybe not Alaska.
If you're like an urban studies like major, like what is the proximity of KFCs to certain, you know, like you, I'm sure
to federal prisons, yeah.
Shocking data could be pulled from that. So all these things are happening, and it's really just to show that this guy's brain is melting. And
he's very upset about his gay son.
Yes. I wanted a thought daughter, but he goes, there's a gay son who he's estranged from, and he plays piano at the cocktail bar, and he's like, hold the tail. And so they go there for drinks, and Kilgore Trout gets there too. But like, you knew this was going to happen the whole time? So it's kind of bizarre.
There's someone else there.
And then there's another person there.
Speaking of other people.
Oh, fuck.
Some right. people paid us to do this. And we are really just delivering the goods.
Yep.
And so we're going to deliver the goods back to them in the form of Michael humiliating himself.
You know what? I'm just most of them seem like really nice people. So I'm going to thank our patrons. If you want to support the podcast, you go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub, where for a buck a month, you could vote in the book poll. But for $5 a month, I'll let you do whatever you want to my mouth, apparently. And I will say these things.
that's a sentence.
I mean, these words are going to come out of my mouth right now, and I didn't want them in there. So I'm going to thank Jeff, Avery, the Black Rabbit of Inle, Carol, Catherine, Colton, see, all nice people, Daniel, Derek, the Dogfish Head Propaganda Bungler, the Emotional Support Burrito, Frederick, Gail and Seth, Grace, Hartley, I like Hartley trying. These are all real names. Hayden, Joe P., Josh, here's one. If Hawk Tua can get famous for spitting, why? if Hawk Tua can get famous for spitting, why can't I get famous for swallowing bowls of chili? It's a good question. Because I don't want to like compare notes with her, but I've definitely eaten more bowls of chili than she'd spit on cocks. I saw a post about that. They're like, why do I know who she is? Okay. Linda, Meep, Mr. Slosh. Oh, hello. All I want for Christmas is an extra wide angle lens so I can record myself on the podcast. That's true. I need to get one that they use for the the fuck is that new space telescope called? The Webb telescope? Ah, good. Someone else. Nate's only pause account. this name is. I think it's Vietnamese. Fuck, phuc, fuck dat juicy pussy.
I think that is Vietnamese. At least part.
Partly. The second half sounds more Thai. Putang Glan. Oh, Seth and Gail are back. Stefan. It depends on if he went into that changemobile thing from Family Matters.
Mm.
Thick Richard III, Ween, William, and Zaphod Beeblebrox. Thank you, all patrons, but especially the ones who make us make me feel bad about myself. My wife asked what I wanted for dinner. I said, no, I don't want anything, honey. I'm just going to starve myself until the patrons respect me again. And she said, oh, honey, don't even worry about that.
It'll never happen. Maybe
sit in the cuck chair. Okay, so thank you, patrons. If you want to join that list, go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub. You can also support the podcast by leaving us a review or go like yelling it into the void on social media. That's always a good thing to do. Or waking up a sleeping hobo on a train and saying, hey, did you know about this podcast? And then they'll stab you.
You actually have to frame it in swastikas for anyone to see it in the algorithm on Twitter now, though. So, like, be careful what you put out there.
Yeah, you have to be like, Hitler did nothing wrong, just like the Drunk Guys Book Club podcast.
That might get somebody to notice, you know.
Someone would notice.
Not the right someone's.
Probably some right someones.
Some far right someones. Okay, back to this book. Where are we? No one knows. They're at the cocktail lounge.
They've all gathered at the cocktail lounge, including the writer himself, Kurt Vonnegut, has put himself into the book. And you're like, okay, let's see where this goes. And Kilgore has arrived, and he's like, he's got a book there with him. And this book is the book where it says that there's one person on planet Earth with free will, and everyone else is robots just doing as they're programmed. And when Dwayne Hoover, in the midst of his ever-increasing psychosis, comes across him and sees his book and reads it, he thinks, this is the message I've been waiting for. And he thinks he's the only free-willed person on Earth, and they're all robots. So he says, I better beat the fuck out of them.
And so he does. He goes on a rampage and beats up like four people in the bar, and then goes over to his car dealership and then beats up the lady. What's, I forget her name. The one he was growing.
Francine?
His secretary. Could have been.
Pefco was her name, right? Or Pefco? Pefco. Francine Pefco.
Mm.
Meanwhile, every once in a while you get the measurements of their penises. They're just like, you know.
I like the guy who was like the general in Vietnam, and his penis is 800 miles long, but mostly in the fourth dimension.
You never know who's going to get one.
Yeah.
And then, which is not a quote from this book.
No. Famous penis book.
Slaughterhouse 5 inches around.
Mm-hmm.
He did give the black guys bigger penises.
Well, just one. One has no, a 9-inch dong. The other guy has like it's in the mix.
It's far above average.
Listen, I don't know how many dicks you look at on a daily basis, Jimmy.
There is one other guy,
but they all made mine feel small.
I forget which guy had the really long one, but it was very thin.
Kilgore Trout has a long, skinny one.
Oh right, it was like 8 inches, but 1 inch 1 inch around.
And he was giving diameter, which is I mean,
was it diameter?
He was giving diameter.
Okay.
No, he said around. That's circumference.
No one could have a 2-inch diameter penis. That would kill someone.
Did you see, just this year, there is a new world's largest penis. If you look it up, you got to Google.
The breeding programs are working.
The guy with the world's largest penis. He's this like dumpy British guy.
It's no longer Jonah?
It's not Jonah. It's apparently some guy who actually let a doctor measure it, and the doctor came out like he just saw the fucking Ark of the Covenant, and he was like, holy shit. And he was like, oh my, I needed a yardstick to measure this guy's 14-inch cock. and on the dumb website where somebody sent me this, where it's like, the infographic of penises to compare them. They just put like a torpedo basically, and like it's like this compared to the average, and it's like, oh my god, that is a humbling. It's like the escape pod next to the Star Wars ship. And the guy's like, it's really hard. People, do you be careful what you wish for? It's like, shut the fuck up. No man reading this is like, oh yeah, there are drawbacks.
when he gets an erection, he faints, but he holds himself up like a telescope tripod thing.
It's like that bird thing that'll keep sipping out of your glass of water. Like, this guy just falls down, it props him back up. He gets enough blood flow to stay awake, and then he passes out again. Like a perpetual motion machine. Look it up. I think his name is Matt Barr. I Googled it. That's what his name is.
And so we can say the bar has been set quite high.
Dude, I can't believe how many times.
Quite long.
Like, where's the Matt Barr penis? Yeah, it's the New York Post reported it in August.
Oh, there you go.
All the news that's fit to print. Or too big to print.
You could fit the newspaper on his dick.
Yeah. I like that the Post article includes the phrase Titanic tallywhacker. Anyway, so they got lots of dongs, and why do we have to know everyone's penis size? Kurt Vonnegut, the fuck, that's his name. I was like, why not? And as a reader, you're like, sure, okay.
Also, every woman is you get her measurements.
Yeah,
well, they couldn't give the penis size. Well,
it's very hard to measure, I guess, a cavity like that. Right? How do you measure? How would you know? Do you fill it with water, and then you empty it out into a jug? You could say, oh, it's 8 pints.
I don't know if that would work that way.
Nate, you're the science person.
Not even going to.
Teach us.
There's a lot of Wheaties in here. Breakfast of Champions. Okay, so.
tell us of your science experiments.
Is it better with sand? Is that? There's nothing else to say about this dumb fucking book. So.
No, there is. Okay, so, and then eventually, so the author, so okay, Kurt Vonnegut puts himself into the book as like, hi, I'm the author, but he calls himself the creator. So you actually, I think somewhere in the very beginning, and then Kilgore Trout explains all of this to the creator of the universe, and then it's actually just Kurt Vonnegut, because he's the author, so he's the creator of this universe. And so Dwayne goes crazy and like beats up a bunch of people, some of them die, and then Kilgore Trout...
I don't think any of them die, but they come pretty close, because he beats the fuck out of him. Like, he destroys his own son's face on the piano keys.
He bites off Kilgore Trout's finger, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, he does bite off his finger.
And then, I'm just trying to remember what happens in, like, the last two pages.
He says, he tells Kilgore Trout, like, I am the author. You are, because Kilgore, earlier in the book, is like, sometimes I just feel like a character in somebody else's book. And then at the end, Kurt Vonnegut is like, I am the creator, the author. You are a character in my book, but you're the only one with free will. Everyone else actually are robots doing what I tell them to do. Like, a bunch of times as the book goes on and on, he says, like, and then they did this thing because I made them. So they were robots. So Dwayne wasn't crazy, but he was crazy. But he was right. And also, Kilgore can't have free will because he still just has to do whatever Kurt Vonnegut writes. So it's a catch-22.
Different book.
And then it ends. It doesn't, like, resolve. It just sort of, like, stuff ceases to happen. And so, therefore, and there are no pages left. And so the book ends.
Well, under Kilgore Trout, who is old, right? In the beginning of the book, when he was at the theater, trying to, like, the masturbation porn theater, the owner kept calling him grandfather. He's like, make me young. Make me young. That's how the book ends. You're like, oh, okay. That must mean something. Yeah, so there's a lot of themes in the book. Free will, pretty overt theme. Criticisms of America, pretty overt.
Free will is a theme, but I don't understand. I don't understand the point he was trying to make with it.
I think there's something about metafiction and about how, as the reader, you are creating the story too. Like, you're a participant in it. I think if I had to bullshit a paper, I would try to lean into that. I don't know what I'd say beyond that, but I'm like, yeah. Just find like some random quotes, take them out of context to support that theory.
So few of these quotes have context.
Like, well, the beavers, were they really wide open? Sometimes you look at that beaver and you go, damn. There is this other line. I don't know what this means, but talking about, Trout. Yeah. It had given him a life not worth living, it being the Big Bang, I think. But it had also given him an iron will to live. This is a common combination on planet Earth.
A lot of them are like, kind of like, I don't know if they're like Groucho Marx kind of lines, but they're like witty little things. And a lot of it is like describing everyday common Earth things as though you were a sci-fi writer from another planet. Like, oh, a snake is a creature. It was one of like, you know, a snake is a thing with a pointy things on one end and a rattle on the other end, you know, and like a little picture. This is what a snake looks like.
It has two syringes filled with venom in its mouth.
Another animal invented by the creator of the universe was a Mexican beetle, which could make a blank cartridge gun out of its rear end. It could detonate its own farts and knock over other bugs with shockwaves. That is true.
And then he's like, seriously, I read that in Reader's Digest.
This shit is real.
Like, I'm not even funny fucking with you this time.
he describes alcohol as yeast shit.
Yeah, and
which
then
is true.
Kilgore Trout story about two yeasts who are having a conversation as they just kill themselves by eating the sugar and shitting out alcohol, and then at the end the reader realizes they were making champagne. Like, hooray!
Which is maybe a climate change thing. I don't even know it was a thing in the 70s when he wrote this, but you know.
I don't think it was. It wasn't the 70s when
So,
Global cooling?
A few people, like one of those key scientists, had started to measure the rise in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Even in the 60s, they started to measure it, to notice this increase for the first time. And so in the 70s, it wasn't widely known, but some scientists were already starting to be aware.
Well, I don't know if Kurt Vonnegut would have been aware, because there is this other quote here about being a sci-fi writer. It says, like most science fiction writers, Trout knew almost nothing about science and was bored stiff by technical details. So he may have been the unlike most science fiction writers. I don't know.
Though I don't think that's actually accurate of science fiction writers, because they fucking love technical detail. It's just Kurt Vonnegut who was more interested in the satire part than in the science part.
Yeah. I think Kurt Vonnegut is like one of those, is like the catcher in the rye. Like, if you read this at the right age, you will be enamored with Kurt Vonnegut. Like, if you're in your teens or 20s, Kurt Vonnegut comes off as so smart. But it's really
just... He seems like
just
a fun guy to hang out with.
Because he just shits on everything.
Yeah.
But he's just kind of cynical. And then after a while, that got really boring for me reading this book.
Yeah, it wears thin.
He's very funny, and he's funny throughout the book, which is rare. Like, think of the funny books we've read, like Christopher Moore and stuff like that, where after a while you're like, I get it. That's the same thing, you know? He is funny. But the cynical part feels like, well, that's the comfortable place to hide when you're like, I'm so smart. Look how shitty everything is. But like, then there's like nothing else on offer. It's just being a curmudgeon. So I found it kind of fatiguing.
Yeah. I mean, I agreed with most of his things about saying the things that are shitty. Like, yeah, that is shitty. And it's true, you know, on a basic level. But it just kind of, you know, there was not a lot of connection to the book to make it seem like this. It was like a series of complaints more than a plot. And then by the end, when he was in his own book, I was just like, I don't know what's even happening now.
And his complaints are just one example of how they're like, you really simplified that in a way to make you seem cleverer. He has a thing about craziness in Germany, and it shows like, and they had a flag that looks like this, and that's a swastika flag. And it goes, and then afterwards we fixed that, and they had a flag that looked like this. Then they made a car that was very popular that looked like this, and it was called a Beetle. But a Beetle looks like this. The Beetle was made during World War II. Like,
yeah, that was a Nazi car.
That was a Nazi mobile. Like, you could, you know, they have a clown cars. They were getting like 19 Nazis into a Beetle. And he just in like an effort to like set up a joke, like changes the history of that. Now, it's not really significant in the plot because, like, I don't know what the fuck it is. But I thought it was indicative of how his complaints and his criticisms were often just like, very shallow, like very, you know, it's more just like, I'm going to throw rocks at this thing from here. And who cares if it doesn't mean done much.
So the internet, that thing that he does, which is like be very cynical about everything, that's the main mode of the internet, like of everything on the internet. So he would have been very popular on Twitter had he lived to be on Twitter.
Which is that and OnlyFans girls replying in the comments.
Yeah. Vietnam was a country where America was trying to make people stop being communists by dropping things on them from airplanes. The chemicals he mentioned were intended to kill all the foliage, so it would be harder for communists to hide from airplanes. And in the comments, what's inside my wide-open beaver? So it really hasn't changed much.
Don't read the comments if you want to see my wide-open beaver.
It is just stories amidst porn.
Well, in that sense, I guess he was very Prussian.
Yeah. No, I don't think he was Prussian. I think he was regular Bavarian.
What kind of name is Vonnegut? I don't know.
Vonnegut? I think it's German.
Good impression.
That's the impression that I get.
God damn it. All right. I don't want to play this game anymore. I don't want to do it. I have a Bismarck one ready. I'm not going to go there. We're going to move on.
So how did this compare to the other two that we read that I definitely remember?
I felt very much like when reading Slaughterhouse 5 that I like didn't really get it, or I didn't get quite why it was thought of as so amazing. Whereas this one, in the beginning, I was like, oh, okay, this is really funny. I think it's because I get it. And then I got to like the second quarter of the book, and I was like, wait, what the fuck is happening here? Even though there were still funny things, like the thing about fart communicating through farts and tap dancing, which is, you know what? Still brilliant. And then other funny things. Like, it was funny, but my sense of getting it was kept going down until I got about halfway through, where it reached zero and then kept going down further. I'm like, what is even? It's kind of like, I don't know.
Do you understand it again at the end then?
Did I go all the way back around? Did I go through the mirror? What is it? Through
the leak?
The leak, yes. Background on the other side. No, I definitely did not. I understood it less and less. You know what? A novel that has a fucking regular plot. That's what I'm looking for in life, okay? And so, like, while I like satire a lot, I need it to have a plot that fucking makes sense. And which is supposed to make sense. And then maybe I could, but this, it's not supposed to make sense.
No.
But then you don't know what it's supposed to, then at least I don't, because I'm an idiot and I don't know what I'm doing. And so, like, what is this about? I don't know. I still thought it was funny.
For a minute in this one, when he puts his feet in like the stream and they get covered in like plastic pollutants that make like plastic shoes on his feet because of all the shit the plant is dumping into the water. I thought for a second it was going to be exactly like Cat's Cradle, where this mystery material comes out of nowhere in the third act and just wipes out the earth. And I was like, oh, okay, he's doing a thing again. But like, then they never mention it again.
Oh, other
than
ice,
his feet were getting
ice
really
10.
Hot. Oh no, there's even more ice. But it was like, oh, his feet are real hot now. And I was like, oh, okay, he wasn't going anywhere with that. Maybe that's part of the meta. I don't know.
Real hot feet. That sounds like a lot of videos on the internet.
That's one of the replies to his tweets.
Yeah.
Real hot feet here. See these feet absolutely covered.
Oh, no. And then there's some fucking real creep. It's like sucking on them toes is the breakfast of champions. Like, oh, God, no.
Free corn.
Breakfast of Fabians. I'm so upset with saying that sentence. I want to throw up. Like, I really, and the no judgment.
Don't waste the corn.
It's really. I found the book, as much as I didn't understand it, and I'm sure people are going to unthoughtful as a comment on it.
We did do a lot of thoughts. That's the problem. It just didn't work out.
It's still not the right ones. It's an entertaining 3.5 hours of reading. Like, it didn't feel like a chore. Where there's books we've read where it's like, I don't know what the fuck this means, and I hate it. This, I laughed a lot. It was entertaining. Did I get everything out of it? Fuck no. But it was fun. And you know what? That's not a total loss. Yeah. I wouldn't say like never read it. I'm like, I don't know if you're going to get it because it's hard.
You don't have to get it to enjoy it.
Yeah. It's fun. And even if you just get it for the silliness and just like that's all you can get out of it, that's okay.
I would like to read his short stories. If he put all those ideas into actual short stories, they'd be fun. I know he makes short stories, but like if he wrote these little blurb ideas as short stories, I would like to read those.
Did Harrison Bergeron many years ago.
Yeah. Maybe he secretly published them all in porn magazines under a fake name, and they're all out there. I'm sure someone would have found them by now.
You know, man, the amount in the 50s and 60s, especially of pulp, shitty sci-fi and adventure magazines, it's entirely possible that they escaped being noticed. So who should any read book? Who?
If you like Kurt Vonnegut, you've probably already read this.
I think it's one of the top ones.
It's the top third.
People like Sirens of Titan, and I hear that title a lot, and Mother Night is apparently a popular one.
Yeah, I don't know. This is like the one that even if you haven't read his stuff or know him, like you've probably heard this title as well. Like I knew this one existed, but I couldn't have told you what it's about. Still can't, but you know.
I think as we kind of said before, if you're kind of the right age, which is like late teens, early 20s, and you're like, just at the age to realize that, wait, shit in the world's kind of fucked up, then this might be just the thing for you to like, oh, yeah, because it's the right amount of both cynical and yeah, cynical and funny. But at the same time, the world, my feeling is the world today has a little bit too much cynicism. Everybody is so cynical about everything all the time, thanks to the internet, largely, and social media, which just turns everyone into the world is it's believing the world is a totally gone to shit. And so this is at least a funny approach on that, but I want to say it was a little bit newer when Vonnegut was writing. It was a little bit less common and a little bit newer when Vonnegut was writing in the 60s and the 70s. And now it's like, well, now everybody's Vonnegut.
That's right. This is 51 years old. So it was probably pretty revelatory at that time. I spoke to a coworker about it, and he was like, I went through a big Kurt Vonnegut phase in my 20s. I was like, yeah, that's when you do that. I'm almost 40. This is like, whatever, man. Get a job, you old hippie. Stop complaining.
Though he wrote this when he was like 50, right?
Yeah. I mean, he died in, what, 2007 or something like that, and he was in his 80s. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he would be around 50 for this.
Well, he says in the beginning, I'm writing this on my 50th birthday. It's my 50th birthday present to myself. So
no
he
math
was 50.
Necessary. Yeah, but I his personality, going back to the books he wrote in the 50s, 20 years earlier, you could tell he was just like a, maybe sardonic, is that the right word? I don't even know when they use that word.
Sardonic
wit. You know, a guy who's like too smart for everything around him, but just wants to sit there and shit on it. And that's fun when you're young. And if you're still doing it when you're 50, I don't know, it's kind of lame. But maybe it worked for him. That's it. No one else should do it.
I mean, it did work for him. He made a lot of money.
Yeah. And I've watched like YouTube videos of him talking and stuff, and he's super fucking funny and like never smiles. Like, he's very deadpan, very effortlessly funny guy.
He would kill it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. He'd have like a better pun than their question, and they'd be like, oh, you know, hold on, we got to check if that, I think that counts as double points. It's her ripe begonias, or the fuck that world's name is. Right? You know how it ends? Like, they have the anagrams of their names, and her name is like Ophelia, whatever the fuck.
You're right. That penis is pretty big on ya.
NPR would not play that. So that's the problem with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's on NPR. And so he couldn't make it on NPR.
NP rated R.
Oh, shit. After that dark. Should be our next romance novel we write. Okay, anything else to say about this book? Thanks, patrons, for picking an easy short one, at least. Well, short one. Not easy, but short.
Yeah. Easy to read. Not easy to understand enough of.
And tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter. And X or whatever the fuck, Drunk Guys Be Safe.
And the other ones. And also Goodreads. There. Yeah. Drunk Guys. In the club. Bottle full of
the club. Like it's your birthday.
It's someone's birthday.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.